That's Canadian. That means that actually the robot that delivered the meal handed Ken a toonie when he was done. That's how that was. And I'm joined, as I am every fortnight, by Ken Holyoke in Lethbridge, Alberta. How are you, Ken?
Oh, I'm basking in victory, I guess it is. No, it's great. Award-winning, folks. That is that's the new tagline. We are recipients. Congratulations, Gabe, and congratulations, Emmanuel. We are recipients of the 2024 CAA Public Communications Award for Professional Institutional Contribution. So
that's right.
At the CAA annual meeting in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan last week, at the banquet, the award was presented. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was very exciting, and it was I think like what we talked about. It's part of the reason we do this is to try to bring some attention to New Brunswick archaeology. So it helps in towards that goal, but also it was just, I don't know about you, Ken, but my vanity didn't mind it either, I have to say.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I mean, it's cool. I was part of a group that won an award in the fall, but I wasn't there to receive it. And so it is kind of, it's neat to, you know, have people recognized an accomplishment. And so we want to thank the folks that nominated mm-hmm. us for the award. And thank you listeners for, making basically the podcast something that's viable for both of us to do, and also your interest, and I don't think you get a public communications award unless there's some evidence that what you're doing is actually having an impact. And so we can look at numbers and stats, but it's actually really great to hear from people like we did at the CAA that, we listen, we really like the podcast, and that they're telling their friends about it. So thank you everybody for your listens and your attention and for the award. Really wouldn't have happened without your participation.
That's right. And thanks to everyone who we have interviewed on the podcast and to the CAA as well for the award. We really appreciate this, and we're looking forward to keep moving on the progress we think that we've started here. So Ken, we were just talking about, I should say we're sponsored as we are every fortnight by the Association of Professional Archaeologists of New Brunswick. Trevor, you'll be getting a slightly larger bill now that we're award-winning. and by the ULETH Shirk Exchange program. So thank them as always. What we've got here, and we foreshadowed this a little bit, is an intrusive feature. And that's because Ken and I, as we mentioned, we ran back to Saskatoon, and now we've run away from Saskatoon. And so what we would like to do is we got to talk to a lot of folks in Saskatoon, and for some of them, we even turned on the microphones while we're talking to them. So we've got some summaries here coming up of people's research at the CAA. But I thought maybe, Ken, I'd just start off with asking, how was your CAA?
It was great. Logan joined me so he had attended his first archaeology conference, which was lots of fun. It was great. I think I do this every year, but I think I overcommitted myself once again, but still had lots of fun. The goal in a conference, for those of you who haven't gone to one, is to sort of present one thing to justify being there, and then you can kind of have a breather for the rest of the time. But I managed to schedule myself basically from Thursday through the end of the day, Saturday, with commitments. But all the same, it was good to do that, I had lots of fun. It was nice to catch up with a lot of people mm-hmm. I hadn't seen for a long time. The Papers in Honor of Gary Copeland was quite possibly the most fun session I've ever been in. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of humor and a lot of work went into the papers that were there. And it was great to catch up with Gabe, obviously. And
we got to
plant our microphones in front of us. And we tried something new this time too. We have recorded for the first time in live audience with three microphones.
That's right. And, you know, listener, as we were setting that up, it reminded me of one of the lessons we learned actually in the Gary Copeland session, which was you should always work from what you know to what you don't. And if that doesn't work, relax, dude. It's Funky Town.
It's Funky Town, yeah.
But we're hoping, Emmanuel, that things didn't get too far into Funky Town in those files we sent you as you're piecing this together. So, it was a good conference. And
how about you? How about you, Gabe? You had a lighter load this time, but
that's right.
Was it enjoyable? I understand that you you've been converted a little bit to the prairie mindset.
And what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, you remarked that Saskatoon was probably the most pleasant prairie town you've been in so far.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
despite the weather was awful. As is tradition at the CAA.
Yeah, the snow sleet operation that was going on that one morning wasn't great. But yeah, no, it's been my favorite of the prairie towns. I mean, the listener might know that that's a little bit like saying it's your favorite town in Ohio. But no, Saskatoon is actually pretty cool. I enjoyed Saskatoon. It grew on me. I saw the Canadian light.
The synchrotron.
And so
Canada's particle accelerator.
Exactly. And lived to tell the tale. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. It's awesome. No superpowers yet, though.
I was going to get to that. It was great. I turned myself into a carry-on to get home.
There you go.
And, we did the poster. I enjoyed the CRM session that you were co-hosting, and I enjoyed seeing some folks, meeting some folks who I knew only by reputation before the CAA. And some of those folks that we talked to, actually, I mean, we can give a quick little rundown here, but I think topically our interviews are going to focus a little bit on just this kind of state of the discipline in Canada, which was sort of a theme, I think, this CAA. It's always a theme at the CAA, but I think this year in particular, it seems like with the growth in CRM, what we're seeing is the discipline trying to figure out where it... I got the sense that this year, maybe more than many years, a lot of the sessions we're trying to sort of reflect on where Canadian archaeology is as a discipline right now. I think that's linked to the rise in CRM that everyone can detect, right? The CRM companies have never been busier. It's probably linked somewhat to an increased number of recent retirements. I think one generation of archaeologists in the academy are kind of wrapping up. And then I think it's also just linked to trying to figure out some very important diversity and equity issues in Canadian archaeology. So those struck me as the kind of overarching themes maybe this year. Does that fit with your understanding?
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, one of the interviews we have is with Tommy Ng and Alvina Tam talking. They chaired the Black and Racialized Archaeology Network meeting. And out of that, I think there was a separate meeting on the Saturday with a group basically talking about increasing the profile of diverse archaeologists, both like working in CRM and in the academy, but also recognizing that the archaeology that we do is actually contingent upon recognizing diversity in the archaeological record as well. That, you know, there are descendant communities, archaeologies of immigrant populations in Canada that I think sometimes we might not be as tuned into as we should be. In particular, Tommy and Alvina are highlighting Asian backgrounds, and, you know, the work of your graduate student Emily and Mary McCarthy highlighting Black histories and how do we approach Black archaeology in Canada. We didn't have an opportunity to interview Mary, but one of the things she brought up is that there are really only a couple, there's a very few Black archaeologists working in Canada, only a couple of whom were at the meeting. And so one of the critical pieces moving forward is increasing that diverse presence in archaeology. And I think I think it'd be fair to say that was a pretty key theme. And certainly I think CRM grappling with where the industry is going. And I think that there is sort of this palpable concern that the advances that we've seen in CRM and the growth of the industry could be significantly blunted by the inability to either get work done or political attitudes that may shift towards not seeing archaeology as a critical piece of the puzzle in environmental consulting in Canada, which I think the roundtable on Saturday, a couple folks brought that up as a point of concern as it relates to education and a bunch of other things. And so those conversations, I think, were really important to hear, some of which we were lucky enough to get people on the podcast to talk about, and some of which we will be continuing with interviews that we weren't able to do on the weekend, but folks that have expressed interest in coming on the show.
That's right. And so we probably don't need to introduce everyone, because we'll introduce them in the individual updates. So to save the redundancy there. But Ken, I know our listener would like to hear, what did you enjoy eating while you were out in Saskatoon?
We had a couple good meals. We went to a nice restaurant on Friday for Gary's thing called Congress. Mm-hmm. I had a steak frites. That's a Gabe Reinick special, right?
Oh, yeah,
there.
Absolutely. A steak frites, really, and it's funny, you know, I hardly ever even eat red meat at home, but there's something about a restaurant that makes a steak frites just about perfect, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it really hit the spot. But it was funny enough, I think the highlight of the food in the weekend was actually Number One Noodle House.
Everybody liked Number One Noodle House.
Yeah, so I had a curry beef dish that was delicious. Mm-hmm. It was a curry beef noodle dish. The other thing too was that the price point was probably the most economical meal that I had. I was pretty hungry.
Yeah.
It was a massive portion for lunch, and it was like $14 or something.
Yes,
so
that's Canadian. That means that actually the robot that delivered the meal handed Ken a toonie when he was done. That's how that was. Yeah. I had a Szechuan noodle. That was the same.
Yeah, the robot that was puddling around with the Peppa Pig music playing while it scooted along the floor.
That's right. Yeah, I think Number One Noodle was the take home winner. I also had a good dinner at a place called Taverna, which was a kind of an Italian place.
Oh yeah, that's a Saskatoon establishment. That's my in-law's favorite restaurant.
Oh, is it? Yeah, it was quite good. And then I think we had what was that brewery we had a couple of nice drinks at?
Oh, Prairie Sun.
Prairie Sun, yeah, also quite good.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that the one you were thinking of?
That's exactly the one I was thinking of. Yeah, over on Broadway, I guess, right?
Broadway Avenue. Yeah. Yeah. So.
And of course, Ecofort branded beer, which was.
That's something I haven't seen before. So that's in the fridge at the lab now.
That's excellent. So, Ken, I think probably the listener is keen to hear from our colleagues. So we'd just like to thank the CAA for the award. We'd like to thank everyone who nominated the podcast. And we'd like to thank all of you for tuning in every fortnight so we can chat. And we'll, without further ado, then we'll hand, I like that I've basically said without further ado before proceeding with further ado over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you to the CAA. Thank you to the listeners. Thank you to everybody who stopped by the booth, CAA Marketplace room, bookstore room, grabbed some swag. And, you know, for whoever's got... NB ArcPod magnets on your fridge now. That's we love seeing that stuff in the wild, and so thank you for being part of it. And once again, thank you to the CAA and the folks that nominated us for the award. So for your listening pleasure, the first ever episode of the award-winning New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast.
And that, how many words is that, Ken?
How many awards?
Words.
One.
It's all one word.
All one word.
All right,
I can't spell that all out right now.
All right, listener, we'll talk to you in a fortnight.
Talk to you in a fortnight.
Ken, what are you excited for at the CAA here?
Looking forward to seeing people and some interesting papers. Looking forward to meeting some folks that I've been actually kind of collaborating with. A couple of them I've just met in person, Lindsay Amundson-Meyer and Matt Monroe.
That's right.
Who I'm working with together on a CRM study.
Yep.
So looking forward to meeting a few folks and seeing papers and doing my work and Gary's session on Friday.
That's great. You're giving a few presentations as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got a poster with you
and
a manual.
Yes.
So that's a New Brunswick Archaeology podcast poster. I've got a poster. I'm a co-author on a poster with a student of mine, Kiana Barron, who
Fantastic.
Undergraduate student. Then I've got a paper in Gary's session. So
that's great. And so the Gary session, we're talking about Gary Copeland.
Gary Copeland, papers in The Dude Abides.
The Dude Abides. And that's a reference to Gary's enthusiasm for a certain Coen Brothers film, right?
Exactly, and that his nickname is The Dude.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
There are other nicknames too, but that's the one we can say on air here, right?
Exactly.
He was your PhD supervisor a long time. He was president of CAA for...
President of the CAA.
Right? Editor of the Journal.
Editor of the CGA for a while. U of T faculty member. Just retired, I think, last year.
Yep.
So that'll be fun. That'll be a good day on Friday. Recording some podcast content.
Yep, that's right. And we're going to have a table here, which we're excited about.
Yeah. Yeah, we're like legit this year. We've got our banner that we're going to put up.
Absolutely. We've got t-shirts.
Yep.
We've got a bust here on the table.
Yeah. We've got magnets.
We've got magnets. We've got coasters.
Coasters?
Yeah, yeah. We used to just be coasters. Now we have coasters.
Now people coast to us.
They coast to us, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I've been coasted a few times in my time, Ken. And so, Ken, our listener also likes to know, what have we done for libations and food so far? We had a nice drink last night.
Yeah, we went to the Bessboro, yep. Which is the, I think it's a CP hotel here in Saskatoon. Yeah,
it certainly looks like a CP hotel.
Yeah, it has the look of it. Very good cocktail. I think it was a sour of some kind.
Yep.
I just had dinner at my in-laws last night. Oh, I don't know where you went out to eat.
Because I did that thing I wouldn't recommend, which is leaving my home at 2:15 in the morning. I slammed a Caesar salad, 4 chicken wings, and a Manhattan.
Oh.
And decided that was the hard reset my body needed to pretend that's how you change the time on your, it's like adjusting your watch, but it's for your for yourself. Which I just did at the bar while playing the New York Times Wordle. And I felt like a new man after that.
That's good. That's good. Yep. Yeah. And then today we had an executive lunch with Logan.
That's right. He's our producer. Or not our producer. He's our, what would be the executive producer? Is that our sort of business manager?
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to, he used the phrase, I'll have you wearing gold-plated diapers by the end of this. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that was at Cohen's Beer or something.
Yeah, Cohen's Beer Garden, I think.
Cohen's
it was.
Beer Garden,
something
like
that.
Right. And it was pretty good.
Pretty good. Got a burger.
And now we're at the Hilton.
Now we're at the. Is this a Hilton?
Oh, sorry, the Delta.
Delta. I think it's a Delta Marriott.
We're at a Delta Marriott. I love this. It's a Delta Marriott Hilton, maybe.
Yeah. And we're having some. I'm having a margarita.
That's right. I'm having a Manhattan.
Yeah. And. I think that we're probably going to be joined here soon by a few people as they float in and out.
So, Ken, we're here in the book room at the Canadian Archaeology Association, and we have an interview.
Yeah, we are joined by Alvina Tam, who is the senior archaeologist for the Toronto and Region Conservation Association, and Tommy Ng, who is a partner and senior project archaeologist with Bison Historical Services. And Tommy chaired a session this morning, a roundtable network meeting for Black and Racialized Archaeology Network. And so welcome to the show, guys. And could you share a little bit about what the Black and Racialized Archaeology Network is and maybe what the meeting this morning was about?
Hi, everybody. Let me start. There was a few years ago, I guess you could say that when the George Floyd incident was happening across the continent and the Me Too movement was happening, right? There was awakening, woke, right? Diversity in archaeology, okay, and there was always a need for more diversity in archaeology, but I think in Canada we're always been aware of that, but we just never moved towards anything more than that. But now lately we start realizing we need more of that. Now why? Because what happened? You're working on a black township in New Brunswick. Right, you need archaeologists who have that kind of a ethnic connection or family connection, right? Are you working for like a Chinatown, like out, in Canada, right? Let's just say like in Calgary, right? And you as a white archaeologist, you discover something let me go specifically. You got a piece of rice bowl, right? And you look at it, and as an archaeologist that's trained in ceramics, first thing you look underneath, and you look for the maker's mark. There's no maker's mark. Okay, and you don't know what to do, right? The funny thing is, I do, because I grew up with regular rice bowl. But guess what? A lot of these rice bowls, right? They could be up to 1,000 years old. I have one myself, right? And the maker's mark, believe it or not, is the artwork and the little artist inscription inside the bowl, and that tells you who is that specific artist. And if you could recognize a certain artwork, you could tell you like basically the year, date, and the artist. So it's not the maker's mark. It's the artwork and a little, chop. I call it a chop inside Rice Bowl. And that's a lot of things that Western chain archaeologists don't know because we're not used to it. And then the funny thing is you live in North America where we're two countries, the U.S. and Canada, are full of immigrants. And everything is so focused, is so Eurocentric based. But we tend to forget that there were other immigrants too who bring their own artifacts and stuff like that. And we're not, and for some reason, the whole focus has been focused on Eurocentric views and stuff like that. So those are two samples that I came across where people of diverse backgrounds, we bring value. We bring a certain knowledge base that other archaeologists who are, well, let's say, I'm going to say white archaeologists not trained at. So I'm not saying that's the only thing. There's other things too, now you got me talking.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's a podcast. Yeah, we need that. Yeah.
There's two market gardens in Alberta. What people don't realize, during the Chinese Exclusion Act, the Chinese people, they were relegated to few occupations, you know, restaurant, laundry, and growing vegetables. And in Banff, believe it or not, Banff, you're talking about in the mountains, there's no arable soil, and there was a market garden that ran a 24/7 operation. They're growing vegetables throughout the whole year. I know, and I was involved with that research, and I found out how much this is an unknown part about Southern Alberta history, is that how much the Chinese people actually grew a lot of vegetables in the Rocky Mountains in the Calgary area. And more of that is being found. They found a market garden in Calgary.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it adds more to the fabric of Canadian history and stuff like that. And the great part is we involve the families, the descendants, and more of that should have been done because what happened was when archaeologists find a certain item, they don't know what it is, right? The families could tell you exactly what that is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And so I nothing specific comes to mind, but so an archaeologist like me of my Chinese descent, I could tell you exactly whether that's a medicine bottle.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Right? I could tell exactly what kind of medicine was used for.
Yeah. You know, it's sort of like sensitivity to classes of archaeological sites, particular objects, and also just being aware of like different descendant communities, basically groups that probably aren't engaged in the archaeological process in the same way that you would sort of conventionally go out when you're doing like even like historical stuff. Like you're not necessarily going out and engaging with like the Chinese descendant community as part of your sort of background research. I guess is probably something that's being missed. Eh?
You're losing over half the story. I mean, what's the whole point? I mean, we're all doing First Nations archaeology here, and the movement is we're getting more Indigenous people involved. Why not get the descendant communities involved? Even you can't find the families, you get the descendants community involved. I mean, it's like working on Japanese internment camps. You get the descendants of the Japanese involved because they have connections and stuff like that. So, and more that has been done. And I'm gonna say it's probably done more on the academic side, but not so much on the CRM side.
Okay.
So more because you know what, everything is on money base. You got to get the project done. You got to push, right? And then, boom, okay, the Chinese were here. You write that report, boom. But that's it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that information will get lost in the shuff in some sort of provincial archive. And we're just sad.
Yeah, yeah. So is that the topic of your session this morning?
Our topic is, there's more to it. We're talking about systemic racism, institutional racism, the experiences we went through. We found out there's generational issues. Because I started in the mid 90s, right? And I had a military background. I came from the military. I went to archaeology, and I experienced racism all through my life, right? And I didn't. And because I experienced racism since I was young, I became inert to it, I become used to it, right? And so I learned how to combat it or deal with my own way. I'm aware that's not the right way to go now, because we got to be a little more awoke. Of what's happening to other people who are not white and what the experiences are going through. And the network meeting we had became a safe space for Avina and I to talk about, and others, about what we had to deal with in this profession. And believe it or not, we deal with certain microaggressions. I mean, like, for instance, I remember working with an archaeologist once, and he goes, I never seen a Chinaman archaeologist before. Stuff like that. He thought it was being ha-ha. But without realizing that Chinaman is a derogatory slight. it's a word, right? It's, but those are the things. And for me, I fluff it off with ha-ha. You probably...
It's really common for us to just kind of let it slide and just not make a big deal of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't want to be problematic.
Yeah, that's it. We don't want to cause trouble, but it's time for us to cause trouble. Yeah, so...
And I think for me, so I started in CRM in like the early 2000s, early mid-2000s, and coming from the Toronto area, I mean, it's just quite a diverse city. And so I think some of my, I guess, experiences, I've been fortunate that I've had some peers that were of Asian descent, but they weren't archaeology students in my work. It was just they needed bodies, and they just pulled some guys they knew. So overly... I guess obvious. And I was really, when I joined the session, I was really reflecting back on my career and just where I might have seen it and these microaggressions. And yeah, it's very subtle and it's never, you know, intentional or mean-spirited, yeah. But it's there.
So Gabe and I are both involved in training students and, you know, looking at sort of the next group of archaeologists that are coming up. And we're both at, you know, mostly undergraduate institutions. Both of us have graduate programs. So what are some of the strategies that you guys think we could do as university faculty to recruit and retain racialized communities and diverse communities, in bring them into archaeology and make it more inviting? And what can we do to teach students, too, about that sort of sensitivity to other sort of cultural backgrounds in Canada that we don't think about, that there's really a growing archaeology for. So, you know, looking at the Asian communities in the archaeological record, but also bringing in Asian communities into archaeology and that sort of strategy.
I think for me, it is such an atypical career to go into. I'm a first generation Chinese Canadian, so I definitely raised some eyebrows at the parents when I told them I'm going to switch to archaeology. I think back to my graduate experience, there was a mentor-menteeship program with the graduate students, and my mentor at the time, they didn't have other, Asian archaeologists or people studying Asian archaeology of my culture.
Yeah.
And so while he could guide me through the graduate experience, there was still a disconnect because he wasn't studying what I was studying. We were kind of the first group to
yep.
do it. But what was nice when I did my second year and I became the mentor, I got to mentor another student who wanted to study Chinese archaeology. And so that was really good. So I really liked the takeaway from our morning session, that to do some more mentorship and just connect young people with the people who are actually working.
Great.
That's actually a really good question, because it was asked at the discussion. Lisa Small, she's one of, I guess you could say, maybe one or two Black Canadian archaeologists. I mean, think about how small that is, right? And she said, we talked about this, like, how can we retain young people to go into archaeology? And she goes, like, she says herself, when she was doing CRM in the field, she was uncomfortable. It didn't, the whole field experience didn't make her comfortable. Because of that, she doesn't want to go into CRM and stuff like that. And so I think we were trying to bandy about what kind of solutions. And we didn't come up with any solutions, but I think we were leaning towards mentorship. We were leaning towards, like, if we just have somebody, like for me, I've been around for 30 years. If I could have a person of I don't want to use the word person of color, because that's, I don't like that term, a racialized archaeologist. I'm willing to mentor him and her, and because I would listen, I would understand what they went through.
Yep.
And that's the thing. And hopefully they will stay in archaeology, because that's the problem. Like, I, as a owner of a business, I get a lot of CVs, but they're mostly from a white archaeologist. And so why are not racialized archaeologists staying in this business? And that is the one question we are asking. Why? And she said, because we're not making, somehow, we're not making things feel comfortable for them. Because there's a sense of otherness. It's a sense that you stand out, you're different, you're foreign. You still get asked the question, where are you from? And I don't know why you get asked that when you had no accent. You know, like, it's always shocked people when I tell people that my family here has been here since 1880s. Your family's been here since 1920s. You're the immigrant.
Right. Yeah. So on that note, we're mindful of letting you get back to join the conference. But are there some resources you could suggest? Are there some way for our listener to find your organization online?
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask. Is the Black and Racialized Archaeology Network? Do you guys have like a presence, or is this sort of it's sort of in its infancy, and you guys will be kind of. We'll see you more.
We don't know yet. We are at the infancy. At this conference, it's the first time you got over 20 racialized archaeologists together in one room.
Okay.
And this is I got a picture of it. Like it's you could say it's a historic moment for Canadian archaeology. And whatever's going to come out of this year, we don't know. It might be continuing to next year. The dialogue needs to continue. I don't know. But it's a first step, and we want something to happen. Times are changing. I don't know what's gonna happen. I mean, it's gonna be people younger than me or smarter than me, or where they get things figured out. You know, like I'm too old.
Yeah, we're aging out too, so that's also a concern.
But Canada's gonna is becoming much more diverse, right? Like and increasingly so, and so it's gonna be really important for student populations that are coming up through the university system to be able to tap into something like this and actually be able to have older mentors and people that you can learn from. And also that your guys' experience are probably going to be different what they go through, but being able to tap into something and being able to talk to somebody, I think is critical. So it's fantastic that's, you guys have hit the start button on it. So we might have to have you back on maybe in a couple of months and touch base again on when you guys, see where this goes.
Well, we got two more sessions tomorrow. We'll see how, especially the round table discussion, that's going to open to everybody, and we'll see what comes out of it. And there seems to be at least from the people I talk to, there seems to be a general interest in what we're doing. And so I hope so. We don't know yet. We talked a lot. We ran out of time.
Yeah.
Lots to talk about. Yeah. But I don't know. We're going for beers tonight. Who knows why we're talking?
Yeah. That's great.
Perfect. Drink alcohol.
So a theme of this show is also that we, alongside archaeology and interesting conversations, we also like to hear what food and drink suggestions. And so do you guys have a haunt that you're going to go to tonight or somewhere that you'd recommend to the listener?
Oh, this is my first time in Saskatoon, so I must defer.
We went to the place called Restaurant 224. It's a Vietnamese restaurant.
Oh, yes. So, okay.
It's all right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you come from Toronto. I come from Calgary.
Exactly.
I heard the number one noodle house is pretty good.
Yeah, so we had lunch there. It was very good. Yeah, it was very good.
That's pretty good.
Delicious. Yeah.
So,
okay. Yeah. When it says spicy in Saskatoon, it's not spicy.
No, it was. I got the spicy curry, and it was like not spicy.
Not spicy.
No.
Yeah. Like,
so I ask you, Saskatooners, you guys got to do better.
Yeah. All right, listener to the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast. You heard that review here that it needs to be spicier.
Needs to be spicier in Saskatoon. So Alvina, Tommy, thank you so much for coming on, and thanks for sharing your time with us, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Well, so we're joined by Scott Nielsen at the Memorial University of Newfoundland, and he's at the Labrador campus, right, Scott? What's the official name of that campus?
Labrador campus of Memorial University. Our school is the School of Arctic and Subarctic Studies. So an interdisciplinary focus on anything Arctic and Subarctic, I guess, yeah.
Well, you're in Labrador right now. You are from New Brunswick originally.
Yes, I am from New Brunswick originally. Yeah, right close to the border with Maine, not far from Presque Isle. So Gabe and I have some similar, what's the word?
Yeah, if the heuristic war had gone the other way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, experienced similar geographies, I guess. And we've probably both skied at Big Rock, I guess.
So what are you presenting on here, Scott?
I've got a paper that I co-authored with Anthony Jenkinson from Shaujit, who's a avocational archaeologist, and we've been doing CRM work in around Shaujit and Natwashish for the last number of years, and have a little bit of new information related to archaic period sites, and so we'll be presenting those. Some of that... not in any detail, of course, but just some initial kind of thoughts about what we found and some potential implications for cultural resource management work in the boreal forest, but also for archaic period archaeological history as well.
That's great. That's going to fill some gaps, I think. And
Eventually, it'll maybe fill some gaps. At this point, it raises more questions than it answers. Yeah. But we're finding different, I guess, fashions of stone tools that don't quite fit within the Rattler's Bite phase and don't quite match with the Black Island complex stuff either, which, of course, isn't well known anyway. So it's adding some information to that late archaic period a little bit more complex than what we had thought, which is always the way, I guess.
That's great. Excellent.
So are these sites really far inland? Or?
Well, it depends. So Nawashish is on the coast of Labrador, but it's kind of what Loring and Fitzhugh would have called like in the inner bays. So it's not out on the islands where a lot of that early Smithsonian work focused. Okay. So it'd be in a little bit west of like Davis Inlet, right near Rattler's, the Rattler's Bite site actually is where that is. And then the stuff in Sheljeet, so Sheljeet is at it's inland, maybe not quite 200 kilometers, but a ways, but it's on this huge inlet, right? Hamilton Inlet, which goes all the way from the Atlantic Ocean all the way up into the mouth of the Churchill River. And so these sites are at the western extent of that. So it's a brackish water, so a freshwater, seawater, marine water mixture sort of thing. So while inland, they're still located on like marine terraces and affected by isostatic rebound and all that sort of
thing. That's great. Okay, that sounds super interesting. How's your trip to Saskatoon been?
Oh, good so far. Yeah, my brother lives here, so it's a good excuse to come visit family, I guess. So, yeah.
This is your brother, the musician?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. He's these days he's more of a parent than a musician, I think.
So. Okay.
Not that they're mutually exclusive, but
So we always like to ask if anyone's had any restaurant recommendations here or bar recommendations here in Saskatoon.
I don't at this point, but I'm willing to take your recommendations if you have any. Yeah.
Good lunch. We've already mentioned number one noodle was pretty
good. Number one noodle was pretty decent.
And we had good pizza last night at a place called 13 Pies.
I get a text message from my wife Peggy's with me, and she told me that a place called Odd Couple, Sushi Raku, and Seasoned Fashion. Seasoned Fusion. Those are all recommendations from my brother. So
okay. And if you're looking for, so heading across to Broadway Avenue is lovely over there, and lots of good restaurants, but pretty close together as well. So
right on. Well, yeah. I've got 3 days to eat food, so yeah, we'll go try them all out.
Yeah.
Great. Well, have a good rest of your conference, Scott, and thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. Yeah,
no problem. Thanks a lot. I'll see you guys later.
We're in the book room here. We are joined by Dr. Lindsay Amundson-Meyer, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Anthropology and Archaeology at University of Calgary, and Dr. Matt Monroe, who is a recently graduated PhD from the University of Calgary, and he is a senior archaeologist and archaeological consultant. Welcome to the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And Ken, I see here there are these things that look vaguely like religious tracts on our table. And the top of this, the listener should know, just says, "Are you involved in CRM in Canada?" And then it's got a list of numbers you can call for help. No, wait, no. It's got something here about a cultural resource management, labor market, and education preparedness study. So would you three like to tell us about this?
It is kind of like a religion.
in that, like, go on.
I think all of us working in archaeology know that there is a bit of a crisis at the moment in terms of having people feeding into jobs, and we also have, you know, I think opportunities in universities to change how we're teaching. So we really wanted to try and start looking at what the labor market for CRM professionals is in Alberta and Canada more broadly, and then to look at how we can start to quantify that market, the need for people going into jobs, and also how our education system is working to train people for it. Or not, right?
Yeah.
And how we can better align all of those things together.
Great. So this would sort of build on the Altshuler and Klein study in the United States, I'm guessing. Is that the impetus in part for, yeah?
Yeah, I think, all of us, just anecdotally, right, knowing other archaeologists and being around folks, we're hearing anecdotally that, you know, there are issues that people are leaving the profession, that companies have job positions going unfilled. And so we kind of wanted to be able to quantify that and look at it a little more than anecdotally.
Yeah. Yeah, and both Lindsay and I are in positions. Lindsay's was originally kind of a CRM orientation, right? So she was at the University of Calgary doing field schools and kind of a CRM style program. As I've talked about before, I'm hired by University of Lethbridge to run the CRM program there. And also it would probably behoove me to be able to to justify my job. And
if you're listening to this, Ken's Dean, he's out here actively researching.
But yeah, you picked up on, and so the challenge in Canada, as we've talked about before, is that, you know, Elchon Klein had this fantastic article that could kind of forecast the CRM industry in the States. Whereas in Canada, we actually have really no way to quantify what the labor market industry is, what the value of the industry is, because those stats are incredibly difficult to parse out from Stats Can data. And so this is kind of the first step in building that out.
And so can you tell us a little bit about what the, we've talked a little bit on the podcast about how to take the survey, but you're also involved in, the three of you are involved in a session tomorrow involving ACRA, which is the American Cultural Resource Association. And I know that this is still being somewhat resolved on the fly, but could you tell us a little bit about why you think it might be useful to have a professional organization sort of at the federal level, is my understanding, it'd be a nationwide heritage organization to advocate for CRM?
We're still a little unsure at the moment what exactly it is that they're going to be asking us to talk about. I mean, the session title is trade organization, which I guess is probably pretty different from a professional organization. And I don't know, I think some people's opinions could be that maybe the CAA should operate more as a sort of trade organization, something that has a capacity for advocacy and kind of talking to different sort of provincial bodies. But if that's not the case, in my opinion, the more organizations, the better, that deal with archaeology around the country. And whatever we kind of talk about tomorrow, whatever people kind of decide, I think it's going to be really important and valuable to the future of the discipline in the country.
That's great. And maybe also bring some discussion. I mean, just listening to you all talk about this, it reminded me of some of the discussions we've had about federal versus provincial legislation, right? And how these are sort of a patchwork in Canada.
Yeah. So I had a conversation with a guy yesterday who's in CRM, and he's not a business owner, but he's a senior partner in the company. And he pointed out that one of the things that you really want to be cognizant of, and I think that it's an interesting perspective when it comes to this ACRA idea and you know, whether the CAA should be doing this, is like, how do we allocate the kind of limited resources that we already have and how people are pretty taxed when it comes to, you know, like I do a bunch of stuff with the CAA and we're constantly trying to just keep our head above water and sort of move things forward, right? And so, you know, is the Canadian ACRA an extension of the CAA, and can you pivot some resources toward that, or do you have external resources that maybe you can get somebody who's staffed to it, you know, in a more permanent way, like where you can make up for that shortfall where people are busy in the field and busy teaching and all this other stuff, and maybe there's somebody that can kind of champion things and keep it rolling forward.
Well, I think that's important work, and so we're looking forward to it. Could you plug your study for us here? And tell us where to find it.
We have cards, so we'll hand them out to whoever's here. But we have essentially two surveys we want folks to fill out. So there is one for anyone and everyone, whether you're working, not working, been in CRM, not. Please fill out the survey to look at, you know, what you're doing, how your education is helping with that or not, right, and some of the challenges. And then we also have another one for folks who are owners or principals of CRM companies or branches of CRM companies to start collecting that actual labor market data in terms of how many employees are there and how many folks are actually employed in the industry. So there are two, and hopefully folks will find them. They're online if you Google them, or we have our cards around.
That's right, listener. Are you involved in CRM in Canada? You may be entitled to compensation.
it's an anonymous survey, and it's also one that we've gone through. Lindsay's gone through the research and ethics board at the University of Calgary, so this is all above board, at board, I guess would be the approved by. And I think the goal, I think we're targeting sort of the end of May for when we're going to keep the survey open. If responses are still coming in, we might bump it out to the end of June. But I think the goal is to kind of start getting some of the data rolling out into a public space this fall, or like late summer, early fall, just so that, I mean, it's meant to be a moment in time, and I think that getting on top of it is kind of the goal, and to be able to share with everybody what's going on. Yep. So,
and there will be hopefully a phase two, so if folks are really interested, they can always reach out, and when we get to phase two focus groups, we can get people involved in that as well.
That's great. And we've also been asking everyone, because many of our listeners like food and beverage recommendations. Have you had any particularly good meals here in Saskatoon? Any good drinks? Any place you're looking forward to?
Noodles. Oh, yeah. We absolutely had fantastic knife-cut noodles.
Uh-huh. That was at number one noodle, I imagine.
We went there for lunch yesterday.
That's right. We saw you guys there. Yeah. We didn't stay. It was so busy. So we moved on, but we came back for dinner.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Spectacular.
Yeah. I think we may be getting a sponsorship from Number One Noodle here. Almost everyone has recommended Number One Noodle.
The real question is, did the robot serve you or did the human serve you?
Oh,
nice.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
I am not a fan of robots. I would very much rather not have the robots in the room, but it was okay. I sat there. I accepted it. I didn't make a scene.
I mean, it sang for you.
It did sing for me. Most robots don't sing.
It was rolling around with the Peppa Pig music when we were there yesterday.
Okay, yeah. It was a pretty cheery robot.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Well, I, for one, welcome our robot overlord. So I was perfectly comfortable with the whole situation.
Yeah. We'll have them on the NB Arc Pod when they take over. So that's
absolutely.
It.
Yeah. In fact, we won't have to be on the New Brunswick Archaeology Pod when they take over.
An AI will do this for us. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for coming on. And we appreciate it. We hope you have a good rest of your conference. And I'm looking forward to the results of this. Are you involved in CRM study?
Sounds great. Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Joined by a very exciting colleague of ours here and someone that works with you at Lethbridge.
Yeah, so we are joined by PhD candidate Tammy Mills, who's at the University of Lethbridge. So she's working on her PhD, just defended her thesis proposal about a month ago now.
Yeah, in March.
Yeah, and getting ready for the field season this year. So Tammy, what brings you to the CAAs and what are you working on?
So I came to the CAAs to present some preliminary results on my research. Not confirmed yet, but hoping to do so this summer. So what I did is I had a site that was the Archaeology Society of Alberta was notified of, and she said that it was a campsite, but the stone circles are buried. So I'm using a drone with thermal imaging and potentially multispectral sensors this summer to detect these potential stone circles under the surface.
Neat. And so you work on all sorts of imaging in your at Lethbridge, and you're also doing experimental work as well?
Well, yeah, a lot of this is experimental. So we also did build a test site at the University of Lethbridge to validate the results as well, just to make sure that everything's on the go.
And so what most people don't know is that Tammy is the best kind of TA in that she, number one, knows how to do the work, but she also like comes up with creative solutions to keep my students busy and means I don't need to teach every class. So
great.
So one of my classes last year was taking the students out with a bunch of rocks and getting them to build the test site.
Oh,
and then this year it was taking them out to survey that test site.
Yeah. I sometimes find in my classes too, I try to get the students to just move rocks from one pile to another. And so we think of it as it's kind of a calisthenic thing too.
We still have a big pile of rocks. Like I can't even remember how much. I think it was like, I don't even know. It was a truck full anyways. And then they dumped it there and I was like, I'm not going to need this many. So hopefully in the future, Ken and maybe Sean and Kevin can use that pile of rocks to build some new features out there.
That's great. And so are you presenting here at the CAA?
Presented on the thermal imaging results from last summer, and a lot of circular features did come up at that site. The oral history suggests that it's a Blackfoot summer camp. So the Indigenous communities talked to the landowner, her father, saying that this was a summer camp. And then the artifacts that have been found on the property as well suggest habitation ranging from the middle prehistoric in Alberta, which is about 7,500 years BP, all the way up to a metal trade point, which is the 1800s. Yeah, so there's stuff there, but we just have to confirm it.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. So is part of the project going to be ground truthing some of the results of the drone surveys, like going out and then like doing physical survey and maybe excavation of some of these, or is that kind of maybe a future project?
No, that's this summer. So we're hoping to do at least shovel testing. There is a drought in southern Alberta right now, and she does use the field for her cattle. So she's concerned about the integrity of the sod and stuff like that. So a larger excavation might not be possible this summer, but the goal is to confirm if there's actually stones beneath the surface with this imaging. And then There are some surface features that I did find last year as well, so we have to go back out there and map them and maybe do a little bit more of a pedestrian survey for additional surface features.
That's great. It sounds very applicable to, and you know, all sorts of applications for geophysics. We're always glad to hear about more of this work.
Yeah, yeah. And so one of the things we do at the conferences is we always ask people, is there somewhere that you've had food and drink so far that you would suggest to the listener if they're in Saskatoon sometime?
I have not yet, because I've just stuck locally to the hotel, and then I went to Winnescuan reception last night. So,
oh, nice.
I did not get a chance to eat out at this point.
Okay, well, we can suggest to you, number one noodle is the hot spot of the conference. That is
extremely popular.
Extremely popular. Yeah. We had lunch there yesterday, and it's very good.
Well, maybe so. I'll head there for lunch today. Yeah.
And a robot may serve you.
I've heard of these robots that serve people, so that's kind of interesting.
And you may be more comfortable with it since you work with geophysical equipment.
Yeah. It's been really, really interesting to work with the drones or the RPAS or the UAV, whatever you want to call them. I'm excited for this summer because we have a multi-spectral drone coming, and it apparently looks like one of the Star Wars droids. Oh,
perfect.
So, like the black one that I can never remember the name of, but Star Wars fans are going to boo me right now. But
yeah, I can see Ken twitching right now. Yeah.
I don't know the name, but I think it's like the Imperial, like, searcher droid.
The reconnaissance specific droid, or something like that. Yeah. But
your kid probably knows the name.
Yeah. And tomorrow's May the 4th, so it's the Star Wars Day tomorrow. So it'd be very apropos to have it out for a test flight tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to a Comic-Con in Vernon tomorrow for May the 4th. So it's gonna be fun. And it's been good experience so far at the CAAs. And
good.
Sad that I don't get to stay for the entire time, but next year.
Well, thank you for taking some of the time to come on the show and tell us about your research.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Tammy.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I'm joined by Richard Grubb and Sarah Beanlands, who've been doing some exciting work on cultural resource management advocacy here at the CAAs. And so I'll start with you, Richard. You're here representing an organization called ACRA, which is the American Cultural Resources Association. Mm-hmm. And could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a trade association of CRM professionals in the U.S., and we've been an association for about a little over 20 years now, I guess. And my purpose of being up here is to determine if there's a way we can start a trade association in Canada like we have in the States. And we had a session this morning. It was very successful. We had about 35 people in the session, and there are a lot of really good questions at the end, so I think there could be a real interest in starting a trade association for CRM professionals in Canada.
That's excellent. And down in the States, what kind of stuff does ACRA do? So it's education, but also lobbying, which I know you don't like that phrase, sorry. No.
We advocate for the industry. In fact, next week, we're going to go to Washington, a whole bunch of ACRA members, to talk to our politicians, which gets set up by our government relations committee. We have a whole bunch of committees representing different things, membership committee, small business committee, education committee, et cetera. I think there's 16 altogether, something like that. And again, our whole purpose is to represent our trade association in the States. We do anything we can to help the member firms.
That's excellent. And so, Sarah, I forgot to introduce that you run Boreas Consulting out of Nova Scotia. And you also have a number of positions in the CAA. And one of the things that you're involved in very much with CAA is advocating for CRM. And so could you tell us a little bit about your session this morning, what came out of it, what are some directions forward, and sort of summarize for the listener?
Sure. We had I had the opportunity to meet Richard about 3 or 4 years ago when the CAA became a partner organization to ACRA. And at that point, I was tapped to be the CAA liaison. So I had the opportunity to have a lot of great conversations with Richard, joining on their board meetings, get to learn a lot about what ACRA does, have since become a member of my company, a member of ACRA itself, and have been so impressed by the resources, the networking, everything that ACRA offers its member firms, and been trying to advocate for the CRM industry in Canada for several years now. And Richard and I began talking about, and Chelsea Caldwell-Pash, we began talking about, you know, there really does seem to be a critical need for a CRM trade association in Canada that much like the one in the United States. And that was sort of the spark that led us to putting together the session this morning, which was entitled The Critical Need for a CRM Trade Association in Canada. The title does say it all. We had a great turnout. We had representation from CRM practitioners and companies across the country. We had an excellent discussion. We had some very brief presentations by Dr. Ken Holyoke. Dr. Lindsay Admonson-Meyer and Dr. Matthew Monroe. And then we also had Richard give a presentation, really just of the background on Akron and what it does. And following those presentations, we just opened it up to the floor. And it was really interesting to see. I work in Atlantic Canada. It can be a little bit isolating working there because, you know, there's only five or six companies as opposed to, you know, the many, many companies in Ontario and Alberta and British Columbia. We don't really have an opportunity to talk very much and to listen to some of the issues that people are facing across the country. This is a country, these issues are countrywide. It doesn't matter if you're a small CRM firm in Nova Scotia or a multinational firm coming out of British Columbia, these are the issues that we face are the same. And I think we are at a point where we need to unite as an industry and really come together and support each other. And I just thought the conversation that we had was really, really terrific. At the end of it, we kind of did an informal poll as to how many people in the session wanted to see this conversation continue, and it was unanimous.
Yes.
So as a result, we're going to continue this conversation and see if we can make a CRM Trade Association in Canada a reality.
And ACRA is going to continue to help the Canadian CRM community start their company, start their association. I think the first thing they'll probably do is come up maybe a small group of people to get together to see how we can move to our next step.
That's great. I was really struck at the end, in addition to the consensus, I think the panel had made some notes and summarized them, and also at the beginning of Richard's talk, he had, you know, the list of like the budget items coming out of the first ever meeting of ACRA in the United States, and how closely aligned they were still, those issues for starting the organization, which, I mean, if that's not a reason to think about it, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
I read a couple of paragraphs from the first ACRA newsletter, which I thought you guys would really like to hear, because it's very similar to how you would feel now.
Yes.
Moving into the new trading association, hopefully.
Absolutely. Well, that's all very exciting, and we really appreciate you both pulling that together this morning. I learned a lot. I enjoyed hearing from my colleagues from really across the country, which is exciting. And we appreciate you coming on the podcast to tell us about it. So thank you very much.
Thanks,
Gabe.